Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives are forever changed by a medical diagnosis.
I'm Jean Marie.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Lita. Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we are talking about the complex world of multiple chronic illnesses with Thomas. Thomas Vancott, PhD, is currently the Chief Scientific Officer for Combined Therapeutics, a Boston-based biotech company developing targeted mRNA vaccines and therapies. Hello, Thomas, and thank you for taking the time to join us today.
Well, thank you for the invitation, and it's my pleasure. Very happy to be here today.
And so, Thomas, I have a question. Are you up for the Nobel Peace Prize anytime soon? Because I heard that that mRNA vaccines have been winning Nobel Peace Prizes, and I'm rooting for you if that's the case.
Well, that is true, but it won't be me. Okay. I am one of the folks that have also benefiting from all the expertise and great discoveries made by a lot of other great scientists. So
Okay. Well, I will still be rooting for you.
Well, thank you.
Just in case. And I just wanted to start us off. I understand that we'll be discussing mRNA vaccines today. Could you briefly tell us what is an mRNA vaccine? And for our listeners who may not be familiar, and how is it different from vaccines of the past? I mean, I think we're all accustomed to hearing about vaccines that are attenuated or live, and mRNA vaccines seems to be a novel and new version of a vaccination or a vaccine.
Yes. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that was a great kind of intro. You're right. Vaccines have been around forever, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, people have been getting vaccinated for over 100 years. And you're right. At the beginning, you know, the kinds of vaccines that were being made were things like live attenuated, right? Mm-hmm. Where they took a virus or so, and they kind of changed it a little bit so that it was live enough to be able to induce immune response, but it couldn't cause any disease.
Right.
But there was always a little bit of danger with that. You know, what if it reverted back to being fully live and could mm-hmm. cause disease? They also tried things like just taking a virus or a bacteria and just killing it, right? Mm-hmm. Like with heat or something and using that. The benefit of that, of course, is you've got the whole pathogen, but then when you kill it, it can change its structure.
Okay.
So the response may not be as good.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went through evolutions using kind of pieces, say, of a virus, you know, just using the protein, you'd make it, you know, outside of the body, you'd make it in the lab, and you'd use that as a vaccine. And they've also been very effective. We've also used things like viral vectors to try mm-hmm. to bring in a particular protein. But you're right, mRNA is new. It's newer. Now, it's interesting because as a scientist like myself, you know, they've been around for over 20 years, right? I mean, scientists have been working on an RNA vaccine for a long time. It was very difficult. It's a complicated molecule. It's a very fragile molecule to work with. But eventually, and we'll talk about that a little bit more, there have been some really great discoveries over the last, say, 10 years or so that have now been able to make it a real viable option of a vaccine. And the M stands for messenger. And so it's messenger RNA or mRNA. And really what that is RNA truly is a messenger in your body. It really instructs the body what proteins to make. And we're doing that thousands and thousands of times a day with all the necessary proteins that we have in our body. In this case, we're saying we're giving the body instructions to make a protein that's part of a virus so that your body can then recognize that with your immune system and then kill it when that virus does enter the body. So it's a really, really cool and novel way to induce an immune response, but it is different than the live attenuated, mm-hmm. whole inactivated, and subunit protein methods used in the past.
Okay.
So, Thomas, this is Ron. I got to start out by saying I'm not a science guy, so you've already lost me. But what you're talking about
sounds,
But what you're talking about does sound really fascinating. Earlier, you mentioned about breakthroughs. Could you tell us some more about some of the more recent breakthroughs and advancements in mRNA technology?
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, the idea of using mRNA, as we were saying, is really a great idea. You know, to make a lot of the vaccines today, you kind of have to make those in the lab, right? You have to grow up the vaccine in a cell, expand the cells, and then purify it, make sure it's pure, make sure that it's what you want it to be. So that, and that's doable. And we've been doing that for dozens and dozens of years. But with the RNA now, you're actually just telling the body, hey, body, make this particular protein. So it makes it just like it's supposed to.
Okay.
And you don't have to go through all of that long production process in the laboratory. So it makes a lot of sense. The problem always was that RNA is not very stable.
Mm-hmm.
And if you inject RNA into the body, you've got these enzymes that are going to see it and just break it down.
Right.
And just basically kill it so that it can't work. So one of the big breakthroughs was, how do we protect the RNA so that it can get into the body and into the cells that can produce the immune response you need for a vaccine? So that was a big discovery. And they discovered that really these molecules called lipids, which are that are found throughout the body, but you can put this RNA inside this, what they call it, a lipid nanoparticle, but it's like a small round lipid particle, and that can protect the RNA so that when it gets injected, it can go right to the cells and it can then induce an immune response and not get degraded.
Okay.
So that was a huge discovery. But the second thing was that there are parts of the RNA that the body may look at and say, oh, should that be there? And it can cause a little bit of inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
So scientists figured out a way to change it slightly so that your body doesn't cause this inflammatory response.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a second huge breakthrough. So when you take those two together, now we can protect that RNA so that it can get into the body, get into the cells, make the vaccine, and it doesn't cause any type of inflammatory response. So those are really the discoveries that led to the Nobel Prize, because it took a great idea, but actually made it usable, made it practical, made it have applications that could really impact human health.
Okay.
That's great. And thank you for breaking that down, because like I said, I'm not a science guy, but I understood that.
Yeah, very, very, very clear explanation.
Yeah.
Can I ask a weird question? I would think that this type of vaccine would be beneficial in, you know, so many ways. But given like things like the bird flu, which then reduces the number of eggs that can be produced, and then that would affect vaccination production by other modalities, is this an advantage over the older types of vaccines because you don't have to deal with that kind of a situation?
I don't think everybody realizes that eggs were used in previous vaccines.
Oh, okay.
Then not everybody has that info. But
okay. Eggs used to be used for as part of the process for creating vaccines.
Right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, and it was mostly with the flu vaccine that would be grown in eggs. You're right. So because it needed a place to grow and produce the right proteins for the vaccine. And you're right. Something like the avian influenza really decreased the supply of those eggs to grow the vaccine. So the fact that you're actually making the vaccine in the body does, and you're absolutely right. You're right on that. You know, now we're a little bit less reliant on some of what, you know, the supply chain, right? The materials that you need for a vaccine, like these enormous bioreactors and these real specialized GMP suites. I mean, you still need them to some degree, but you don't need a 20,000 liter bioreactor to grow up these cells and make the vaccine. So it does have an impact on supply chain, the necessary raw materials that you might need to make a vaccine. So I think that's a very good point.
All
right. Thomas, can you give us an example of how mRNA vaccines are being utilized in cancer treatment?
Yeah. I think we all hear about mRNA being used for vaccines. Well, we all know about for COVID, right? For infectious disease.
Right.
And that makes sense, right? Because the mRNA, you can put in coding for the COVID surface antigen, the surface protein for a vaccine. And you could do that with other infectious diseases, right? The idea is that you want to bring in a protein into the body so that the body recognizes it. Now, what people have done with cancer, and I don't know, you know, I can tell you, I didn't really realize how important the immune system is to cancer as well. I think we all know how important the immune system is to fight, you know, viruses and bacteria, but I don't think we, as many people, know that it's also really important to fighting cancer. And so one of the things that scientists have kind of discovered and realized is that when cancer is growing in your body, it sort of takes over a cell, right? When that grows, it actually produces new proteins that aren't in a healthy cell. Mm-hmm. So if you took a healthy cell, if you looked at a healthy cell and you looked at a cancer cell, there's going to be some differences between those two cells. And what scientists have been able to do is figure out what are those differences. And sometimes it's a unique protein. Now, fancy terms for that is a neoantigen. You may hear that term, which just means new antigen or new protein. So if you can find these neoantigens on a cancer cell, then that becomes a target for your immune system. And think of it this way, so that if you then take the mRNA and use that to express that unique protein, then you can stimulate the immune system to go and attack any cell that is expressing that protein. And since we know that's only on the cancer cells and not the healthy cells, that is a really effective way to fight cancer. And so even the companies like Moderna and the Pfizers and BioNTechs, all those that led the field for the COVID vaccines, they're doing that same thing now for cancer. So they're looking at all the different cancers, what's unique for a cancer cell versus a healthy cell. Let's express that unique protein using our mRNA, and let's use that for as a cancer vaccine or a cancer therapy.
Okay. And is it then a universal type situation where it could possibly or potentially be utilized to treat all cancers? And then I'm going to throw in a very weird question, and it'll definitely show that I haven't taken microbiology in like 30 years. But like, could it also be utilized for like prion diseases?
So I think you kind of, you know, it would be absolutely ideal if we could identify, you know, that unique protein on a cancer cell that's the same in all people, right? And there are some, and there are approaches that are going after that, right? So there's going to be some cases. But right now, what you're seeing, and you may hear the term personalized medicine or personalized treatment. Some of the big studies that are going on right now, they're finding it a lot more effective if they look at an individual and say, what's unique in that individual? And because the mRNA can be produced, and we can talk about that, but it can be produced more rapidly, you can have a patient with cancer come into the doctor. The doctor can take a sample. The scientists can figure out what's unique in that person's cancer, make that mRNA, and use that to fight that individual's cancer. So I think, you know, the holy grail or the great would be if we could find that unique protein that was across a large mm-hmm. population. And we're doing that. But at the same time, there's also a lot of work that says, you know, it's a little bit easier to find those that are unique to cancer cells in an individual mm-hmm. and then make more of a personalized cancer treatment.
Okay. Similar to how they're utilizing specific chemical and medicinal compounds or products to help specific individuals because of their unique, you know, every individual is unique, so that it has to be tailored to them. So,
yeah, okay. Yeah, yes.
Okay.
And you, and maybe we'll talk about this more when we talk about, you know, what other, are there other realms or mm-hmm. other diseases that it could be used for? The answer is yes.
Okay.
There are areas outside of cancer and infectious disease, and maybe we'll get to that a little bit later.
Okay. Thomas, before I go to my question, I had a statement. I was listening to the news here in Chicago this week, and Northwestern Medicine now has a shoebox size testing implement where they can put 6 different tissue samples from 6 different organs and then test on those organs so that they can find out, well, will this medicine or will this product work on that? Is that something that you guys would be also incorporating into your work?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds to me, I haven't read that article, but I'm going to right after this podcast because it sounds really interesting. There's two different things that we're kind of talking about. One is, how can you look at healthy versus tumor tissues mm-hmm. and figure out what the differences are, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of science and technology going to trying to do that quickly and accurately. So that's one thing. Another thing that's really big is to try to have models in the lab
right.
that you can use to test whether or not your treatment has any promise or not, mm-hmm. right? And so it sounds like that's what the folks at Northwestern are doing. Mm-hmm. They're coming up with these different models using different types of tissues and cells to be able to say, is this molecule I'm developing, is this mRNA or whatever approach, is it working? Mm-hmm. Because you need to, you know, it's very expensive to develop these products. And the more you can learn testing in the laboratory, you know, the better off you are. That's how you advance the science. So there, it's really interesting. This is why the field is so much fun to be in. So many smart people are working on these models. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we use them to predict what's going to work better? There's so many people that are working on trying to figure out differences between cancer and healthy cells. And then there's so many people trying to improve these platforms like mRNA to make them even more safe and even more effective. So it's just it's a wide open field that really takes all of your time to try to keep up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I'm glad that the internet era that we're in allows for
global
research,
a global community to work together, and
right,
that's
very
truly
important,
an amazing thing.
But I do have a question about us normal people here that don't have those type of understanding of medical procedures and scientific breakthroughs. But with all the breakthroughs, it's surprising to us to hear that there's still distrust and skepticism regarding the mRNA vaccine or treatment,
but isn't it
in the general public?
But it's true of all vaccines.
Well,
right?
No, not really. I'm thinking that they're picking up on the RNA, thinking, oh, it's going to change my DNA, and I'm going to be they're saying that I'm going to turn into a monkey, or I'm going to turn into a people.
If only that would be lovely. I mean, wait, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So is it just a lack of education? What's going on?
But if you could turn us all into bonobos, I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
We're missing that part of the script, guys.
No.
I'm telling you.
Sorry.
No, you're right. There still is. There is a lot of distrust, and that's something I try to follow as much as possible, because it's important to understand, you know, what are the concerns, and people have concerns, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they're worried about their health, their family's health. So, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I spend time is trying to understand that. So from the scientific perspective, we can either communicate better, or we can look at ways that we can demonstrate. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's a fact. I mean, there's a lot of people that are concerned. And I think absolutely it's new, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, mRNA as a therapy or a vaccine is novel, and it came into the public eye pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as someone like myself that's been in the vaccine field most of my career, it didn't come on the scene quickly. We've been working on mRNA for over 20 years, and there was excitement over 20 years ago, but we needed to continuously improve safety and potency, and we finally got to that point. So, I mean, Moderna has been around for 10 years developing this technology and done many clinical trials. So but to the public, it kind of came on quickly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then because of the way the government mobilized to de-risk the development, it happened pretty quickly. I mean, normally a vaccine will take, you know, 10 years or so to develop. And now we did it in one or two. And that wasn't that any, there was no change in doing all the appropriate safety. It's just that we were able to put a lot of funding in place that, you know, folks could, you know, prepare large scale manufacturing before they had proven, before the clinical studies were done, so that we were ready. We didn't have to wait for 5 years to then make the first lot. So there was a lot of things. But I think you also said this has been around forever. I mean, when you talked about, you know, people concerned about mRNA, I mean, the first vaccine was a vaccine for smallpox.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, developed from cowpox, mm-hmm. which was something they took from a cow. This was, you know, over 200 years ago. And people were concerned that they would turn into cows because they got the vaccine. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's new. It came on quickly. But, you know, so it's kind of up to the community to continue to educate, because these vaccines have now been in hundreds of millions of people, and they're found to be extremely safe. And it's just a matter of continuing to educate and allowing people time to absorb this new technology.
Yeah, that's exactly why we wanted you on the show.
Yes.
Because we couldn't put it any better than you are.
Right. And Thomas, could you give us an example of some of the more common misconceptions associated with mRNA vaccines?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I you know, there's some sources that, you know, will, you know, you kind of get, well, they'll almost blame mRNA on any different ailment that comes up in society. But I think the bigger concern, and you kind of already hit onto it, is that somehow the mRNA itself, because they hear, you know, they hear gene, they hear mm-hmm. genetic, they hear, you know, they think of DNA, they think that it can modify your own personal DNA. Mm-hmm. And that's not true,
mm-hmm.
because mRNA is not DNA. mRNA mm-hmm. comes from DNA. It doesn't get in the nucleus. It doesn't integrate. It doesn't modify at all your DNA. One of the things exciting about mRNA, and we kind of alluded to it earlier, it's not very stable.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to protect it to get it into the cell, and then it can express for a short amount of time before it gets degraded. So it's just enough time to make that vaccine antigen to stimulate an immune response, but then it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that is a misconception. It's not true. People worry about it. So we just, again, have to continuously kind of explain that, you know, this is not DNA. This doesn't modify your DNA. So, you know, I think we're going to get there. It's going to take a little bit more time.
Okay.
Yeah, and I guess implementing in school, the more that you learn about it as you're growing up, you'll feel more comfortable with it.
Right, and, yeah. Right. It's important to dispel these misconceptions, obviously, and provide accurate information to the public. As we wrap up our discussion, could you share your thoughts on the future of mRNA vaccines?
Sure. You know, we're very fortunate at how effective these mRNA vaccines have been, right? I mean, they've saved many, many lives, many, many, many people from getting sick. So they've been really remarkable in their efficacy and their safety. But, you know, from a scientific perspective, we always want to further improve. And, you know, so there's still a lot of research being done. And some of it has to do with, you know, can we make the response last longer, right? Because I think we all know that, you know, we had to get three doses and then we're going to come in every year. That's fine. I mean, that's workable. But wouldn't it be great if we could get, you know, so that we could only give one shot, it could last longer. So there's a lot of work at trying to extend the duration of the response. There's a lot of work also being done to kind of broaden the response, you know, because a lot of these viruses, and it's not just COVID, but even flu that change all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be really great if we could develop a vaccine that could protect more broadly
right.
against any new strain that came out. So there's a lot of work, you know, being done to do that. It'd be nice if we could, and here's a term, targeting. It's one of the things that we do at Combined Therapeutics, but make sure we get it exactly to the right cell we want, and then maybe be able to lower the dose, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which could be cost savings. So there's still a lot of things that we can do to improve. And also, and this is maybe less impacting the public, but make it more stable formulation so that we don't have to keep it frozen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could store it in your refrigerator, right? Which makes it easier to, you know, ship internationally. So there's a lot of work at just, you know, being able to get it to store at, say, 4 to 8 degrees Celsius or, you know, in your refrigerator versus having to put it in a mm-hmm. in a freezer. So, mm-hmm. you know, even though it's been so successful, there's still, I mean, there's dozens of articles every day coming out on ways that we can continually further improve the technology.
And hopefully develop that cure for cancer or a vaccine for cancer.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That would be wonderful. Yeah. And Thomas, are there any negative or downsides to mRNA vaccines or their production?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're really, you know, I would say there's not really any negatives.
Mm-hmm.
There are areas, there are attributes that can be improved. And I kind of talked about that. Longer duration, fewer shots, better, wider protection, lower storage temperature.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I wouldn't call those negatives because all vaccines have those issues. So those are just areas that can be improved. But, you know, the biggest, you know, it's, you know, the mRNA is the platform, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the way that we're delivering the antigen to the immune system. The biggest challenge in vaccines, whether or not it's infectious disease or cancer,
mm-hmm.
is what is the target?
Right.
Right now, for something like COVID or SARS-CoV-2 that causes COVID, you know, picking the right target, I don't want to use the term easy, but it was relatively easy because there was a single protein really on the surface of the virus, and that's the target.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about something like tuberculosis, for example, which is a huge global health problem, there are hundreds of different proteins. And the research in figuring out which of those should be the target of your vaccine, that's an enormous challenge in vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's similar to what we talked about with cancer,
mm-hmm.
is what is that ideal target? What is that unique protein or neoantigen that we want to target? But mRNA really is a ideal, once you've kind of selected that, mRNA is really an ideal way to deliver that antigen to the immune system.
Okay. Yeah, and you don't have well, I was going to say you don't have the risks of, for example, like if you had the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccination of the past, and you know, were given that as a child. If you had someone in the house that was immunocompromised, you were concerned about that, and you know, when it passes through the system and getting to that person, and then there the possibility that they could, you know, so it eliminates a lot of those issues, and I think that we all appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that people that are immunocompromised don't have that concern that they could potentially get something from someone else who was trying to do their best by getting vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. Thomas, yeah, your company, Combined Therapeutics, you're developing the next generation of mRNA vaccines to protect everyone from global infectious diseases as well as cancer. In the next 5 years, do you potentially see any human trial for the cancer vaccine?
Yes, absolutely. We've been working really hard over the last several years to do a lot of the things that we just discussed, you know, okay, to kind of optimize the mRNA platform for our applications, to select the right antigens or tumor-specific antigens. So, and we've been doing all of those laboratory studies and preclinical studies to show that, you know, it works and it's safe. So we are now ramping up to do the kind of, people call it the CMC activities, but, you know, to do the manufacturing. So that's where you make it in a very safe, controlled environment, mm-hmm, so that it can be used in people. And you go through all those regulatory steps to prove, right, to the FDA that it's safe, and then to start the clinical trial. So the answer is yes, we are now ready. In 2024, we will begin all of those manufacturing clinical activities in order to begin to test our concept in the clinic.
Excellent. I like to see that. Mm-hmm. Thomas, can mRNA vaccines cure any and all illnesses theoretically?
As far as a vaccine, you know, a vaccine is not going to cure all diseases. You know, a vaccine is going to be very effective where you need your immune response to really kick in and help, whether or not that's, you know, against an infectious disease, whether or not that's against the cancer, you know, these antigens, whether it's, you know, even to try to dampen an autoimmune response. But it's not, an mRNA vaccine is not going to protect against all diseases, because, you know, there are other diseases that are really not a function of the immune system not being kind of cranked up. You know, for example, your rare diseases, right, or your genetic diseases, you know, vaccines won't be effective. However, the mRNA platform could be used and is beginning to be used for some of these other types of diseases. So, you know, where if your body, and these are the types of diseases out there, you know, they could be genetic diseases where your body is defective in making a particular protein. Mm-hmm. I mean, think of muscular dystrophy, right? That's, you know, your body can't make the dystrophin protein, so your muscles degrade. Well, one of the things that the folks that are developing mRNA are starting to put their attention into is say, hey, wait a minute, we can use mRNA to deliver that protein to the body. We can deliver mRNA that codes for, say, the dystrophin protein that would then restore that protein to the muscles so people could not have that degradation. Now that's all kind of a whole new area for mRNA. A lot of people are looking into that. There of course are hurdles, because your mRNA now needs to make more protein than it does for a vaccine. You don't need to make much for a vaccine, but for some of these therapies, you'd have to make a lot more. So they're actually really, we won't go into detail here, but it's just incredible the innovation that in the minds out there and smart people are coming up with ways to make more protein using RNA.
I just got to jump in real quick. Because I work with a lot of students with disabilities, including muscular dystrophy. I mean, how far off do you see something like this for MD?
Yeah, you know, I did a lot. I've done a lot of work in the gene therapy field. So traditionally, and I think we may have all heard about this gene therapy treatment called by a company called Sarepta. But they're using a viral vector, something called AAV, that's producing the dystrophin gene in people. And so now this has just been approved by the FDA for age 2 to 5, which is really, really exciting. Now, mRNA, it has advantages to the using the viral vector to deliver. So not to get into too much detail, but the dystrophin gene that's delivered by the AAV had to be shortened because this AAV can only carry so much genetic material. The lipid nanoparticle that's used to deliver mRNA can hold a much bigger piece. So you can encode for the entire dystrophin gene using mRNA in a lipid nanoparticle. So that's a huge advantage. Plus, with gene therapy using AAV, your body often recognizes the AAV as foreign, so you can't give repeated doses.
Okay.
Because your immune system would stop it. But with the mRNA and LNP, you could. So it's much earlier in development, but it holds a lot of promise because you could give repeat doses and you can carry in a lot, you can code for a larger protein like the entire dystrophin gene. So stay tuned. There'll be a lot of work on that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And Thomas, what is the difference? Because you were saying, modifying DNA. What's the difference between CRISPR and mRNA vaccines?
Yeah. So mRNA vaccines, as I think we talked about, so they're, a way to deliver the protein to make the immune system recognize it and then fight off the virus if it's ever seen. CRISPR is an amazing discovery, but it's actually a way to modify the gene. So if you have a genetic disease, which, there's thousands out there, CRISPR can actually could correct that that gene. And so that's, gene editing is it's also often called for CRISPR. So it's a way to modify either RNA or DNA in a cell to correct any deficiency.
Okay.
Now, and so that's much earlier in work. It's used a lot in something called cell therapy, which is being used for cancer. So you can take a cancer patient's cells, bring them in the lab, and convert them into cancer-killing cells. And often you can do that with CRISPR technology and then re-inject that. And that's been extremely effective at treating cancer patients. Now, the two do come together because, interestingly, you still need to deliver that CRISPR to the cell. And what they're starting to use a lot is using mRNA, to encode for the CRISPR and deliver it to the cell with an LNP, and that can be done in the lab or in vivo. So they're different technologies, but they can come together in order to more efficiently deliver CRISPR to the cells that you want to correct.
Okay.
Can I throw in a...
And I have a question, too.
I have a follow-up.
We have so many questions.
I have a follow-up. Okay. So here I am, Lita Thomas, and I just got my vaccine, my mRNA vaccine that Pfizer created, and it's going to protect me from getting COVID for the next couple of months, hopefully. That little tiny shot in this big body, how is that how is that little shot going to protect this whole body? Does it replicate once it's in? And if so, why can't we? All right, no. Does it replicate when it's in?
No, it does not replicate while it's in. So, and that's the thing. So, you know, the immune system is really an, it's going to take years to fully understand the immune system, but it's really an intricate process that goes on in the body. So it doesn't take a lot of this foreign antigen to stimulate an immune system. And then the immune system continuously kind of generates itself. And then it can also distribute throughout the body. And now it just alerts the cells that, hey, if you see this particular protein, it's bad and kill it. And it can go, you know, so this is all happening in your lymph nodes. Those cells can circulate through the whole body looking for that. So you really just need to generate that. You need to get that mRNA into those lymph nodes so that you get that response, and then the response spreads. And that's one of the things that we do at Combined Therapeutics is we, for additional safety, we engineer our mRNA so that it only expresses or predominantly expresses in the lymph nodes where you want to get that immune system, immune response generated. But no, the mRNA is not replicating, gets in the cell, makes some protein, and then it gets degraded. It's the immune system that recognizes it and then amplifies itself and spreads throughout the body to protect you.
Okay, thank you very much.
And I would be remiss if I didn't ask, what sparked your interest in this career field?
I'm a scientist by training. Mm-hmm. I get excited with anything that's new. And I certainly get, you know, it's funny because when I was a grad student, I was in a little bit more of an obscure field of quantum mechanics and spectroscopy. And I used to get excited about, you know, hey, if I publish a paper, only about 10 people in the world will understand this paper. I used to think that was great. And then the first job I really had out of grad school was working on a vaccine for HIV. And I remember my first boss telling me, well, Tom, wouldn't you rather, do research and not have 10 people interested in your work, but 10 million people be interested in your work? And I thought, well, that's a really good point. So, you know, certainly got very intrigued about kind of working in fields that had, you know, global relevance and importance. So I think, you know, it's a combination of that kind of global relevance and the really challenging technical and scientific questions that you need to get through in order to make progress.
Okay, thank you.
That actually leads me into my next question, but I got to say this too, because you don't see Jean, she's off camera, but when you're talking or when Lita's asking questions, I'm looking over at Jean and she's just,
well,
shaking
I
her
am
head.
A science person.
That's
I
what
love
I know.
Science.
Yeah,
I know.
She's our
resident scientist over
my
here.
My specialty was nuclear, biological, chemical, and radiological. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
So,
yeah.
When I'm hearing you talk, I'm looking over at her and she's
And we're like, okay, whatever.
Well, I used
and
to then, work with like Fox vehicles. So it's the.
And then Lita's asking a question and I'm looking at Jean and she's just shaking her head it's like, I good. Can't believe you.
My
just
mother
asked
is embarrassing me.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
So,
I'm also thinking of analogies and things to give you after the fact.
Yep.
Okay.
So you just mentioned about when you were a grad student and you were talking about publishing for 10 people and your boss said, hey, wouldn't it be cool to publish for 10 million? What about the next year or so? What are you looking forward to doing?
Personally or professionally?
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. I'm both, but I'm kind of curious.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, obviously two things. One, I want to take a lot of long hikes in beautiful places with my wife. Of course, that's one of the big objectives to always do. But, you know, from a scientific and mm-hmm. you know, perspective, you know, we've worked really hard on our technology, right? And we have a great group of people at Combined Therapeutics. We're not a big group. We're a relatively modest group. But, you know, we put a lot of time and effort and thought into trying to create kind of the next generation of an mRNA platform, one that we think can help, you know, extend the duration, decrease the dose, you know, better target precisely where we want the mRNA to go. So we spent a lot of time doing that. And what we really want to see is we want to be able to bring that, you know, into the clinic. We want to be able to show that this works also in people.
Okay.
You know, in relevant models. And that's really our goal, is to just get to move this concept along as far as we can take it.
Sure. Okay.
Sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. How can our listeners learn more about you and the work that you're doing?
Sure. I mean, you know, we have a website at Combined Therapeutics that we just updated, so they certainly can go there. We're also on LinkedIn and Twitter. You could follow us. We present at a lot of different meetings, and you could always contact me by email or LinkedIn if you have any specific questions. I'd love to talk about what we do.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Thomas. It really was an honor to talk with you today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks a lot for doing this podcast. It's great. It's a great service for the public.
Right.
Yeah, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day today. If our listeners have any questions or comments about today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast.
And as always, please remember that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.